Welcome back. My first guest, as always, my all-star leadoff hitter, Luke Jones, is joining us right now to talk some Orioles, some Ravens, and maybe even a little bit of professional wrestling sprinkled somewhere in there. Luke, welcome in.
Dennis, how are you, my friend? It's always good to talk to you.
Always a pleasure, Luke. And I guess we should begin with the Raven OTAs, right? Lots of buzz. The team signed Laquon Treadwell, one of my draft crushes from Ole Miss from a few years ago. Can't miss receiver, great hands. He gets to the pros. From what I recall, he just could never gain separation. Easy to cover. But he's bounced around. But now the Ravens have five former first-round draft picks and wide receiver. When you're talking about Treadwell or Aguilar, Bateman, Flowers, OBJ, it goes on and on.
It really does. And I thought it was interesting. First of all, I was just kind of surprised that they would make a signing like that. I mean, let's face it, as you mentioned, for as much as Laquon Treadwell at one point in time was a hot commodity and was a first round pick and all this hype, I mean, he's been a bust. Let's call a spade a spade. I mean, he hasn't even had, you know, he's had like maybe one decent season with Jacksonville a couple years ago. I mean, a big disappointment. So I was surprised to see the Ravens even make that signing just because of all the resources they've pumped into the position this offseason. But I think what was most telling to me is, even though we're talking about it here and we're going to spend 90 seconds talking about Laquon Treadwell, it didn't really register that much of a ripple in terms of attention. And to me, that really speaks to how the outlook at the position has changed since last year.
Yeah.
Dennis, if you had told me back in January the Ravens would be signing Nelson Aguilar and Laquon Treadwell, I probably would have thought about that in a much different context and said, same old Ravens, just trying to sign guys that are either over the hill or guys that never were.
Right.
And in this case, it, you know, it's much further down the pecking order. And I mean, I'll call it what it is right now, and I'll do my roster, you know, my roster projection after next week's mandatory minicamp, which is still way too early.
Sure.
But Laquon Treadwell will be listed as a long shot. I'm not even
Absolutely.
Sure he's going to be on the roster bubble. And I think a lot of this may have been a product of, look at this past week and see some of the wide receivers that were missing. Beckham was not there. Rashad right. Bateman wasn't there. Zay Flowers dealing with a little bit of a tweak. Dante Demas was not out there, although I saw him on the sideline later in practice, and some other wide receivers that were banged up as well. So this might have been as much a case of get another body out there, take a look at him during mandatory minicamp, and we'll see what happens from there. If he does shows enough nice things at that point, yeah, sure, take him to training camp. Who knows what could happen? But I also wouldn't be shocked if he doesn't even make it to training camp,
right,
because that's just how deep they are at wide receiver at this point. So, you know, it was interesting just because it's a name you recognize, but I think he was with what, four different organizations last year in the 2022 calendar year. So.
For what it's worth, Luke, I'm not buying a jersey. I'm not there yet.
No,
I was ready to buy, who was the guy from Pittsburgh? Le'Veon Bell. I was ready to buy a jersey with Le'Veon. I was excited about him until I saw what I saw on the field. So now also I read where Treadwell is also supposed to be a good special teams player. I know that always appeals to Coach Harbaugh. To a degree, not saying he's a lock to make the roster. He's still, like you said, very much a long shot.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's going to have to do stuff like that. And I mean, that's really what it's going to come down to. So, but it's fine. Again, you have a 90-man roster. I mean, right off the bat, 90-man roster.
Yeah.
You have 53 spots on the regular season roster, and then you have 16 guys on the practice squad. So you do the math. There's already right off the bat a number of guys who have no shot,
right,
really, of making this roster. So you bring them in, you know, you have another healthy body out there, and you know, he was out there running around a little bit this week, and we'll see what he looks like at mandatory minicamp.
Look, I think one position group we need that hasn't been talked for good reason that much this off season, because of all the emphasis on the wide receivers and the Lamar contract, is a tight end group. Mark Andrews continues to amaze me. Most guys, when they sign that big contract, take the foot off the gas. At least that's been my experience. I go back to Terrell Suggs. As great as he was, every time he signed a contract, it seemed like he took a year off. Mark Andrews, not so much. Best shape of his career. That says a lot because he's always in great shape. And Charlie Kohler had the sports hernia a year ago. He's a dude, 6'6", about 250. And we saw what Isaiah Likely is capable of doing as well.
Yeah, that's why I think it's going to be so interesting to see how this offense under Todd Monken evolves, because there's been so much focus on the wide receiver position, and understandably so. There should be focus on that when you consider what they did there with a first round pick and with signing Odell Beckham to the kind of money the Ravens haven't handed out in a really, really long time to a wide receiver. So that said, you just said it. I mean, Mark Andrews, until someone shows otherwise, Mark Andrews remains the number one receiver on this football team. I mean, we're talking about, other than Travis Kelce, who's several years older than Andrews, there's not another tight end in football I would take over Mark Andrews. So, and like I said, even with Kelce, it would be a case of, all right, is it for this year, or are you talking the next 5 years? I mean, he's been that good. He's been a top two or three tight end for 3, 4 years now. So that's where you look at this thing with him, especially, but also then when you get into Isaiah Likely, who had a nice day on Tuesday, Charlie Kohler, who I think will have a tougher time cracking this offense, to really be involved just because of the numbers at wide receiver now. But I certainly wouldn't dismiss him. But that's where you look at this thing and say, let's not completely forget about the tight end position. Yes, we're moving on from Greg Roman. Yes, there's going to be a higher emphasis on the passing game than what we've seen in recent years, and probably not as much heavy personnel, and probably going to see a lot more three wide receiver sets. But at the same time, you still have these three tight ends. And I don't want to even say three. I want to say you have Mark Andrews, who's an all pro at the tight end position. And then you have two really interesting young tight ends behind him that are developing. And in the case of Likely, did some nice things last year. So we've talked about it. And I don't even say this in a disconcerting way. It's just reality. There's only one football to go around. So to try to project how much more involved Likely could be, or Charlie Kohler could be, I mean, who knows? I mean, I think that's really difficult to say. But at the same time, you certainly don't want to dismiss that, because I think if you've noticed one thing around the NFL in recent years, and the Ravens were ahead of the curve with this a few years ago, but before their offense kind of plateaued, is it's still really beneficial to use 12 personnel if you have dynamic tight ends on your roster, and guys that can run, because they are such matchup problems, because they can either out physical defensive backs or they can outrun linebackers. So who exactly covers them? And we've seen that be a problem for teams trying to deal with Mark Andrews for years now, even when they've tried to double team him and bracket him and things, he still gets his. So I think from that standpoint, it will be interesting to see how it works out. And I think something that will be interesting, just from a sense of how this shakes out, is you look at Mark Andrews, who has been almost exclusively a guy that's lined up either in the slot, or we saw him line up out wide last year, has not lined up in a three-point stance as an inline tight end very often. Same thing you could say about Isaiah Likely, who, let's face it, was a wide receiver in college. I mean, that's kind of, he's a wide receiver in kind of a tight end's body, I guess you would say. And Charlie Kohler, same deal. So for me, that's where it's interesting to look at someone like Patrick Ricard, or the young guys, or Mark Andrews, because I'm sure he'll line up in a three-point stance a little more often, but you're still going to need some sort of inline tight end that's lining up. I don't think the Ravens are just going to go four wide all the time. So that's where it will be a little more interesting to kind of figure out how this evolves and what it looks like. So yeah, Andrews will be on the field a ton, as he should be. But is he going to line up more as an inline tight end, or will he be still lining up as a slot extensively, and that opens the door for an opportunity for someone else? So that's where you look at someone like a Patrick Ricard, who, if I were him, and look, he's a multi-time Pro Bowl fullback at this point. I'm not at all, this isn't a critique for him. This is more a suggestion of just the reality of where the Ravens offense is right now. You kind of wonder if he would be better off shedding some LBs, getting a little bit thinner, almost trying to go for the Nick Boyle body, rather than being a 300-pound fullback and kind of becoming a blocking tight end, if that might be what's best for him, if he wants to remain in Baltimore long term, or just kind of looking at where the reality of where fullbacks are in the NFL, although they've made a little bit of a comeback over the last couple of years. I will note that. So, but my point is, they do have a need for an inline tight end. And that was Nick Boyle, that was Josh Oliver a lot last year. And that's going to be a role that's still going to have to be filled, because again, I don't think you're going to see the Ravens lining up without an inline tight end all the time by any means.
Absolutely, Luke. Patrick Queen, he shows up to camp, right? He knows he's playing for a contract. He's doing all the right things, saying all the right things. J.K. Dobbins, a little cryptic tweet. I don't put too much stock in that. It's in his best interest to show up, be in shape, stay healthy, put some good stuff on tape, and work himself into a good contract next year, whether it's an extension with the Ravens or with somebody else. Because look, he may have a great year, but the market for the running backs, we know what it is. Whether you're Josh Jacobs or whoever, you get your feelings hurt when you realize the market isn't that great for you out there, and that's not to diminish Josh Jacobs or the rest of the running backs. But I can also see J.K. Dobbins coming back, being worth more to the Ravens, let's say another organization, after the completion of this season, barring any other significant
It's
setback to his knees.
sure. I mean, I think it's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out. Now, as I said to you, and we talked about this even going back a couple weeks ago when Dobbins wasn't there for the start of voluntary OTAs, we always say what? Look, it's voluntary. It's every player's right to either be there or not be there. However, as media, as fans, we're not going to ignore something that looks like it could be a symptom of some, whether you want to call it malcontent, disenchantment, whatever it might be. I think it's pretty evident that J.K. Dobbins is not thrilled with his current situation. I think that was evident at the end of last year. It's one thing to talk about not getting the ball in Greg Roman's offense, but with Todd Monken and all the additions made at wide receiver, is J.K. Dobbins going to get the ball more than he did last year? I think that's a big question because, oh, you still have Gus Edwards as well. So there's that. There's the concerns about his long-term health. Not that he didn't finish the year on a very high note. We saw what he did down the stretch. He was fantastic. However, he's missed a heck of a lot of time the last couple of years. And if you're the Ravens or any other team for that matter, I think you're very much intrigued to see what he looks like this year, what he looks like playing what you hope will be at least 15, 16 games, if not a full season. I'm not going to say that he has to play a full 17, but he's got to play very close to that. If we're going to be talking contract, and then you do get into what you just mentioned, just the reservations that teams have about paying running backs in general, any kind of real money. So if you're J.K. Dobbins, I think you're sitting there and saying, well, look how great I've been when I've been on the field. But if you're the Ravens and Eric DaCosta, you're saying, we haven't been on the field a whole lot. And look,
Right.
that's not your fault. We're not blaming you. Injuries happen, but we have to make a business decision that's going to make sense for ourselves, especially now having a franchise quarterback who's making top of market money. So that's just the reality of this situation. So I think he will come in great shape. I don't think there's going to be any issues on that end of the spectrum, but in terms of his level of happiness and, all that, and him going to be looking at how often, how much he's involved in the offense and how many touches he's getting. That's where, I think it would be fair to brace for perhaps a little bit of disenchantment there. And look, we talked about this with Chuck Clark a couple weeks ago with, some of the comments he made in Jets camp, which, to me was just a sign of reality of where the Ravens were making a business decision, and then he ultimately wanting to make a business decision to get out and go somewhere else, and that made perfect sense for him. So in the case of Dobbins, he's looking at all of this and saying, I want to get paid. He knows the reality. His agent knows the reality of running backs in the NFL. But if you're the Ravens, I mean, look, would I talk a modest contract extension with J.K. Dobbins? When I say modest, I don't mean 1, 2 million a year.
Right.
Would I pay him $5 million a year for the next 3 years? Sure, sign me up for that. I'm guessing J.K. is looking for way much more than that. That's where you kind of look at this thing, and I think you just let it play out. And I think, that's where you're kind of looking at this thing. And I'm of the thought that I'm not going to pay any running back lucrative money, whatever lucrative money is for a running back in this day and age. And Miles Sanders got a nice contract. We still see some guys get good contracts. It's not as though it's non-existent, but if it were me, if it were my football team, if it were my front office, I'm looking way more at the reality of where this offense is currently heading, where this offense just is with Lamar Jackson. And we've seen a number of running backs have success here. I've said it over and over, running backs, the analytics community, and I mentioned this, I'll echo this. I said this with Nestor as we talked earlier this past week. The analytics community has said running backs don't matter. I think that was not taken the right way. I think they matter. However, you know what matters way more? In this case, Lamar Jackson for the Ravens in a very unique setup, but more so in any other situation, it's your offensive line and their run blocking that really, really matters when it comes to the running game. So from that standpoint, I'm much more inclined to play this thing out. J.K. Dobbins has plenty of motivation to have a great season. I think he'll come in and I think he'll look the part of a number one running back. We'll see how many touches he gets. As we've always said, when Lamar Jackson's your quarterback, he's going to run the ball. Even if it's not as much as the pass, he's still going to run the ball plenty. And the Ravens are, preparing to throw the ball more often. So J.K. could be more involved in that regard. And I've noted, I've written it at BaltimorePositive.com. You've definitely seen the backs more involved in practices. Although I would say that that was the case in the spring for Greg Roman offenses as well. You always have to keep that and take that with a grain of salt. But I think it is going to be very interesting to see how this plays out. And yeah, I think there's definitely some uneasiness there, some unrest there. But as you mentioned, Patrick Queen probably feels the same way deep down, but still has plenty of motivation to go out there and play great to get a contract, whether it's with the Ravens or with one of the 31 other teams out there.
The Ravens are such a class, well-run organization, and they're smart about how they go about their business. They would love to sign both Patrick Queen, extend Patrick Queen, and J.K. Dobbins, but at the right price, right? They're not going to overpay anyone. And just circling back to running backs, we can go back and look at when Dallas gave Ezekiel Elliott his big extension, and then Tony Pollard right away showed more pop, more durability than Ezekiel Elliott. 17 games, Luke, is a long, long season, particularly for running back. Back in the day, we played 10, 12, 14 games as the NFL expanded the schedule, 16, 17 games. Yes, every game they add makes a difference in the pounding that these guys take. So it does make sense to have running back by committee versus relying on the traditional bell cow running back.
Either running back by committee or just say, you know what? We're going to be disciplined as an organization. We love running backs during their rookie contract. Jamal Lewis is a great example of this. I mean, even with him having missed 01 with the torn ACL, the post Super Bowl year, which was so disappointing because Priest Holmes had walked it and then Jamal tears his ACL the first few days of training camp. But yeah, the Ravens, he rushes for 2,000 yards 2 years later and the Ravens gave him a big contract. Did that deal work out? Not really. When you really look at it, it was much more a case of there's another example. You mentioned Zeke Elliott, Christian McCaffrey in Carolina. The Panthers said what? Our guy's different. Our guy's special. More often than not, these guys aren't. And look, I empathize for these running backs because they get chewed up and spit out so many different times
They
during their
do.
rookie contract. They do. And that's, it's unfortunate. And if there's, I don't know what the perfect solution would be for that position specifically, but at the same time, you can't ignore reality and just say, well, we like JK, so we're just going to give him whatever he wants. So I think, again, my expectation is he'll have a really strong season, and I think he's going to have other teams that are going to be suitors. And if I'm going to guess right now, I'm guessing he'll probably be. More, he'll get more than the Ravens are willing to spend at the end of the day. That's my early prediction. I mean, it's June. Who cares? To anyone listening right now, I'm wrong plenty of times. I'll be wrong plenty of times in the future, but I think you just have to let this thing play out. And ultimately, he's got to stay on the field. And he knows that. So he's doing the things that he needs to do to prepare for the season. And but either way, I do expect J.K. Dobbins to have a strong year. And I am interested to see how Todd Monken envisions his role in terms of carries, in terms of being a receiver out of the backfield, which that latter part was really kind of untapped under Greg Roman.
Yeah, there's no question about that. I think the NFLPA has really, if they can do a better job in representing the players, running back would be the one position because it's such an instinctive position. Their best days are in a rookie season and the year thereafter, the first 2 or 3 years. After that, I mean, when they're injured, they're broken down, they really get the short end of the stick when it comes to contract extensions. They really do.
They do. And you know what's fascinating? And I've had this conversation just privately with a couple friends of mine at different points over the last year or so. I wonder for running back specifically, if the long-term answer is going to be stay in college and maximize your NIL earnings
That's a good
at the
point.
collegiate level, and then you'll have these big numbers. And I get it, you're probably not going to be a top five pick, even though there were two running backs taken in the first round this year. But then you'll have your rookie contract, and hoping that you put up big numbers in college, and whether you're a first round pick, second round pick, whatever it is, it might be to go that route. Because I mean, we think of so many of these running backs. I mean, Zeke Elliott, if NIL was a thing, although people would say, well, Ohio State probably paid him anyway. Yeah,
Probably
that's neither here nor there. But you look at some of
Michigan
these.
fans would say that anyway.
Right. But you look at these situations where you just say, maybe that's what the answer is going to be for running backs. Maybe you'll see more running backs stay an
Well,
extra year and try to really cash in NIL wise. I don't know. It's above my pay grade, and that whole world is still being sorted out as far as how that's going to ultimately look. But I'm with you. It's just tough because the NFLPA, and we saw this back in 2011 when that the not the current CBA, the last CBA had been signed. It very much went in a direction of supporting veteran players and the rookies, on the rookie contracts. I mean, you remember what first round picks used to get in terms of
sure.
contracts, and in 2011 that all changed. And unfortunately for running backs, they're kind of at the end of the curve there on the not so flattering side. So we'll see how it plays out. But it's evident that J.K. Dobbins not thrilled with this situation, and I think that's a big reason why we haven't seen him yet, but fully expect to see him during mandatory mini camp, and I'm betting he's going to be in great shape.
Yeah, I mean, running backs usually play linebacker in high school. They play both ways. And so if you've got a kid who's a running back or a linebacker and he's got NFL potential, I know one thing I tell him: you're going to go down the Roquan Smith trail, not the these other guys that just don't get there, because it should be a different scale for running backs. I've always said that. I've always been a firm believer in that. But until further notice, I mean, you have to play defense as a team when you select, and running back by committee is the way to go. You talked about Priest Holmes. He was an undrafted free agent, right, out of the University of Texas. He blew up. And Jamal Lewis, he was what, fifth overall? And Jamal Lewis had a significant ACL injury in college. J.K. Dobbins did as well. You look at J.K. Dobbins, Ray Rice, you look at Jonathan Taylor. They were workhorses in college. You're talking a lot of carries, a lot of wear and tear by the time they hit the pro level.
Yeah, and that's another thing that I've looked at. I remember looking at this when the Ravens were contemplating what to do with Ray Rice, and that was one thing that I think was fair to take pause with him. Was he had, I want to say, north of 800 carries at
He
Rutgers, something like
did.
that. I
He
mean,
had a
it was
ton.
extraordinary,
He had a ton
right?
of
So
carries.
I think you just look at that, and it's
And
look.
Ray was different with his dimensions, his stature. You know, the
Right.
bigger backs tend to get they're more exposed to hits. They're not as shifty. And Ray was unique. But again, Ray was slowed down by injuries as well.
Slowed down by injuries, wasn't in the best shape in 2013, and then obviously what happened off the field.
Yeah,
But
of
I mean,
course.
I think it's tough. I mean, I think, you're in the automobile industry. I mean, even the greatest cars and even the best maintenance that I know Koons provides and all the
They wear
services,
down. They wear down.
there's still a certain mileage, and you want to maximize that, and Koons does that. I've Speaking of it with personal experience and happiness with my dealings, but at the same time, no car, no automobile is going to last forever. And
That's true.
running backs, unfortunately, are the same way. Running backs have a much shorter shelf life
They
in
do.
many
They
cases.
do. They really
Yeah,
do.
it's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate, but that it is what it is. I don't take too much out of OTAs, training camp, et cetera. I don't start really paying attention until the pads come on, right? So, any other thoughts or observations before I move on to Orioles baseball?
Yeah, just a final thought. We had had an opportunity to hear from Chuck Smith, the Ravens' new outside linebackers coach, who for years was a private pass rushing trainer. I encourage everyone, you can check out my 12 Ravens thoughts at BaltimorePositive.com. I've linked to his session there. But he was asked about Odafe Owe. Big year for Owe, obviously. I think I would venture to say of players that are kind of on the proverbial hot seat or under the microscope, I think Owe is near the top of the list. Probably still put Lamar Jackson there in some light, right? After being
Look,
paid.
and let's
But
stop with Owe for a second, Luke, because I know that Look, I know that there was more to drafting Odafe Oweh than Eric DaCosta watching him, work on the sideline, against the Terps and whatnot, and ignoring the fact that he had zero sacks, his senior or his last year in college, right? He wasn't the tape didn't match the physicality. So I'm keeping a keen eye to see if Smith can unlock Oweh's potential.
Yeah, and he talked about Oweh, and he talked about David Ajabo in a similar light. Although Ajabo certainly, I think that he has a longer leash in terms of patience, and for him to develop, knowing last year was always going to be at best a glorified redshirt year. But Chuck Smith talked in very plain terms. He was refreshingly blunt about this, and he flat out said, "Look, the greatest pass rushers. I mean, think back to all the all-time greats that you watched." They all had a signature move, right? Whether it's a swim move, Dwight Freeney with a spin. I mean, all the di different moves that these guys had. And the thing he said about Oweh is, if there's one thing you'll know about Odafe Oweh, is you'll know what his signature pass rush move is this year. Now, that doesn't automatically equate to he's going to have 16 sacks, but I think what it does tell you is he's really big on you need to have a plan. It's not about just trying to run around the left tackle or the right tackle. It's not about just trying to out physical someone. You have to have a plan with your hands, and you have to be strong with your hands, and you have to have a pass. You have to have moves. You have to have a move for how you're going to beat that pass blocker, because they're really good too. So not to say that that's a knock on previous outside linebackers coaches they've had the last couple of years, but we'll see how this plays out. And Chuck Smith has worked with some of the great pass rushers of the last 20 years, privately. So it'll be interesting to see how he makes that transition on, a level where he is working with an NFL team. And he's someone who he did have a coaching fellowship with the Ravens about 15 years ago. So he was familiar with John Harbaugh and Steve Bisciotti and Eric DaCosta. So that kind of opened the door for this opportunity for him. But we'll see how it plays out. I think what he's saying probably isn't something that is so foreign to lots of outside linebackers coaches working with their guys. So, but we'll see if he can untap some of that potential. And I think for me, with Oweh, a big thing that I'll be looking at as we get into the season is he did have some success late last year, actually sliding inside and rushing from an interior spot, which seems counterintuitive because he's not the biggest guy in the world. This isn't a Pernell McPhee type big rush linebacker who slides inside and can almost be almost look like a light defensive tackle. I mean, Oweh's light. I mean, he's listed at 250. I wonder if he actually is 250. But he had some success doing that late last year. So it'll be interesting to see if the Ravens try to do that a little bit more, especially knowing that you don't have Calais Campbell rushing from a three technique spot anymore in pass rush situations. So the Ravens, not saying it'll be Oweh there all the time, but my point is they're going to have to mix and match and change up their fronts a little bit more, which they like to do anyway. So that's not unique. But Oweh, this is a big year for him. And certainly they need Ajabo to look like the guy that warranted a first round pick had he been healthy last year, and the Ravens still took him in the second round. So they need those two guys to pop. Even if they're going to bring in a Justin Houston kind of guy at some point here, between now and the start of training camp, but they need those two guys to pop, because otherwise you're going to look at that pass rush and say, they're going to have enough there, because we've talked about that for a number of years now, and for more often than not, that's been something that's been lacking in some otherwise strong defenses for the Ravens in recent years.
Yep, no question about it, Luke. Let's move to the Major League Baseball. Talk about the Orioles. They're not winning as much as they were earlier, right? They've come back a little bit, and let's talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. A tough series in Milwaukee, no question about it. Especially on Wednesday night, Dean Kramer knocked around, and they lost the previous night in extra innings. But I think one thing that we focus so much on the pitching, and understandably so, with Grayson Rodriguez being sent down after his struggles, and finding out John Means wasn't going to be back quite as quickly from Tommy John surgery as they had hoped, because he's dealing with muscle strain in his back. We've talked about the bullpen and how much they've been used, but go look at the Orioles offense over the last few weeks. It's fallen off.
Hasn't been good.
It's been a struggle for them. And that's not to say that no one's hitting, but You look at someone like a Ryan Mountcastle, who, I mean, go look. I mean, he's got a sub 270 on base percentage right now. That's not good enough. We've talked about Mateo, and as great as he was in April, it's been a major struggle since then. I mean, he's got a 271 on base percentage. They're still searching. I mean, Gunnar Henderson, looks like he's going to take off, and then, struggles a little more, had the back issue on this road trip. So, not panicking. Certainly not panicking. You're talking about a team that still has one of the best three or four records in baseball at this point, but certainly seeing them come back to earth a little bit. It was a nice series win in San Francisco, so I don't want to overlook that. But yeah, rough go of it in Milwaukee. And look, the Brewers are good. I mean, they pitch well, and they went up against Corbin Burns, who, even if he hasn't been, quite as dominant as he was winning a Cy Young a couple years ago, still someone
Real
who,
good pitcher.
when he's right, I mean, he's going to be really, really tough to beat. So, but they got to get the bats going. And we've talked a lot about Austin Hayes, and they've gotten some contributions from a Ryan O'Hearn or a Josh Lester from the minor leagues, but they need to get their guys going. Santander struggled on this road trip as well. So, they've got to get the bats going, because go back, even though for the season their stats are still really strong, go back and look over the last 3 or 4 weeks. It's been lacking. It's been, a little more of a bottom 10 kind of offense over the last 3 or 4 weeks, compared to being a top 10 offense as they were before that. So, these are the ebbs and flows of a 162 game schedule. And certainly it helps that they're going to come home and play Kansas City for three. Certainly a Royals team that you better handle, because, they have not been very good. I mean, they're approaching almost 30 games below 500. They've been one of the, if not for Oakland, you'd look at them as the worst team in baseball. So it's certainly a weekend to get healthy for the Orioles, but you want to get the bats back in order. We'll continue to talk about the pitching. I think that's just reality, but they need some a spark offensively. And who knows? Maybe it's going to come from the minor league level. I mean, we've talked about Colton Cowser, we've talked about Jordan Westberg, so maybe we're going to see one or both of those guys get the call at some point here in the not too distant future. It's been a struggle, and certainly not having Cedric Mullins, since he was lost on Memorial Day to that groin strain, hasn't made things any easier for them. But it's as simple as just getting back on track, get back to winning series, and they'll be fine. Nothing to panic over, but certainly offensively, it's been a struggle for them the last few weeks.
Well, I have my tickets for one of the games against the Blue Jays, so I'm looking forward to going down there. This is probably about the fourth or fifth game I'm going to this year, which is a record for me, at least at this stage of the
Very
season,
cool.
anyway.
No doubt. I mean, and again, that's where you continue to balance how much fun this is, but also at this point, and I've said this with Nestor, it was last July when they really took off. They had showed some signs. They had shown some signs before that, but it was really when they took off. So, this has been about a calendar year now that they've played at this kind of level. So one, that means give them the benefit of the doubt. When they lose a series here or there, don't think that the sky's falling. And that's something that I have to remind myself about, certainly. But two, I would also say the standard is higher now. Expectations should be higher now. And that's why I want to see Mike Elias do everything he possibly can. I want to see ownership do everything they possibly can within responsible reins, understanding that this isn't solely about this year, but about the next 5 years, the next 10 years, you hope. So you don't want to just completely bleed your farm system dry trading for guys at the trade deadline. But at the same time, you've got a unique opportunity here to fortify this roster. And whether it's strengthening this pitching rotation, whether it is strengthening the lineup with an established bat, whether it's adding another relief pitcher or two, which is something I'd like to see, because I think you still need more consistency out of your middle relief. There are opportunities for this team to get better between now and the August 1st trade deadline, which is still almost 2 months away. So a lot can happen between now and then. But at the same time, I don't want to see this team miss out on an opportunity to make themselves better, to get back into the postseason, and not just get into the postseason, but give your chance an op you know give yourself an opportunity to make some noise in the postseason. So not expecting a World Series championship this year. At the same time, I think it is more than reasonable for fans to look at where the Orioles stand right now and say, okay, what can you do? Where can you trade from your minor league system where you have a little bit of a surplus to go get this piece or to go get that pitcher or that hitter or whatever it might be. So should be very interesting to see how it plays out. And in the meantime, still a very enjoyable product to watch on a nightly basis. And from that standpoint, what more can you ask for? It is entertainment at the end of the day.
For sure. And speaking of entertainment, Luke, let's wrap it up by talking about we lost two legends in the world of pro wrestling. I'm talking about the superstar Billy Graham, who was really Hulk Hogan before Hulk Hogan became Hulk Hogan, and also the Iron Sheik, whose Twitter account I'm going to certainly miss. Very, very enjoyable.
Absolutely. I mean, superstar Billy Graham, a couple weeks ago when we lost him, a week, 2 weeks ago, something like that. Very famous as it pertains to professional wrestling history in Baltimore. It was at the arena, the Civic Center, that he beat Bruno Sammartino back in what, 77, I think it was, off the
Yeah,
top of my head,
you're all over it.
for the WWWF title. So very big. A very significant pro wrestling history here in Charm City. Superstar Billy Graham, certainly one of those individuals, had the gift of gab at a time where that wasn't really much of a thing. And my goodness, it's everything today. And he had the physique. Now, certainly we could debate, steroids and all that as far as getting that
Supplements,
physique. But
supplements.
yeah, but that was a big part of it. And as you mentioned, very much influential on Hulk Hogan, Jesse the Body Ventura, and a number of other wrestlers. But for me, and Superstar Billy Graham was a little ahead of my time. As you know, Dennis, I was born in 83. So I remember Superstar Billy Graham managing Don Morocco in the late 80s. And I remember him doing some commentary for WWF. And obviously, I'm aware of his career. But for me, what really hit home was losing the Iron Sheik. Just such a all-time great villain, someone who leaned right into the fact that he was Iranian and his history. I mean, my goodness, he was a part of the security team for the Iranian, royalty and everything. I mean, he comes to the U.S. and trains under Vern Gagne, and I had an amateur wrestling background and all this and. Had been a baby face initially, and then it all changed. And hey, he wanted to be a bad guy, and he shaved his head, and he became the Iron Sheik. And again, the gift of gab. And I think what's fascinating, and if you had a chance to see it, A&E, through their partnership with WWE, they did a biography on the Iron Sheik not long ago. Came out 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago, something like that. And one thing that was mentioned was, you think about this. I mean, he won the WWF title from Bob Backlund in December of 1983. I mean, this was a time where white guys were the champions, right? I mean, you had other minorities, you had other ethnicities, but they were very much marginalized in how the pecking order went. So for the Sheik to win the championship, albeit it was fleeting, and he was the transition champion to Hulkamania and everything that happened in January 1984 at Madison Square Garden. But the Sheik, just with his personality, his just leaning into being a villain, his gift of gab, Mean Gene. I was watching promos of the Sheik, Mean Gene Okerlund, on YouTube. Mean Gene was the pro's pro when it came to wrestling. Interviewers and commentators, and the number of times Sheik would say something, and you would see Mean Gene have to cover his face because he was laughing.
Was
You just saw that. But for me, and this is where I'll remember just being a kid back in the 80s, I thought wrestling was real. I mean, a little secret there,
okay.
but I will say,
My dad went up until he passed away at 72. He thought wrestling was real,
yeah.
okay. And although I told him otherwise, although I showed him otherwise, he still was in complete denial. He used to cry. He
Absolutely.
was a tough man, but when his favorite wrestlers used to lose or get hurt, he used to cry. He'd feel bad for the family. I'm like, Dad, it's a put on. No, his whole family. He's gonna. Oh, he look. Chief J. Strong broke. He got his leg broken. Or the Valiant Brothers did this to Haystacks Calhoun. They cut his head open. That poor guy. I'm like, Dad, it's not real. He was like, No, it is real. Anyway, I digress.
The thing I'll say, I liked the Sheik even as a bad guy, as a kid who loved all the baby faces and loved all the heroes. And I will say this, I just said this to my brother not long ago. In fact, before we first got on our Zoom here to talk, of all the iconic props, costumes, All the different things you can think of, guys, ring gear, all of that. I will put the Sheik's boots, his pointed
Ah,
boots,
the
in the
boots.
top five easily, as just you would see that, and it's like
He's
the
loading the
Iron
boot.
Sheik. You
Here
would just
comes.
see his feet, the
Here
Iron
comes.
Sheik.
Here comes. All right.
Absolutely.
Here comes.
Between that and the Camel Clutch, which was a pretty great finishing submission move, definitely gonna miss the Sheik. And hey, plenty of controversy surrounding him as well, and drugs and different things of that nature. So I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that, but. Boy, he offered a lot of entertainment over the years, for a long time for me. So he'll definitely be missed.
He really will. Luke, as always, I appreciate your time, your insight, and your thoughtfulness on our show. Please tell our listeners where they can find you, Baltimore Positive, your blog, all the other great stuff that you do.
Absolutely. I encourage everyone to follow us on Twitter at WNST. You can follow me personally at Baltimore Luke, whether I'm in Owings Mills for mandatory mini camp this coming week, or I'm back at the ballpark as the Orioles return home to start their latest homestand. Check that out at Twitter. BaltimorePositive.com, my blog, sponsored by Coons Florida Baltimore. The latest 12 Ravens thoughts. I'll have thoughts on the Orioles as they're winding down a road trip. Mixed bag of results and coming back home. But you can check out my blog at BaltimorePositive.com. You want to be on the WNST Baltimore Positive Text Service sponsored by Coons Florida Baltimore. If you are, you'll find out any significant Orioles roster moves, any significant Ravens signings, whether they bring back Justin Houston or someone of that nature, any significant local sports news sent directly to your mobile device via the WNST Baltimore Positive Text Service sponsored by Coons Florida Baltimore. And of course, anything throughout the week on AM 1570 with Nestor. Any sound from the ballpark, interviews with Ravens players and coaches from Owings Mills. You can check out all of that at BaltimorePositive.com.
All right, my friend, keep doing great things. I appreciate you. Enjoy the weekend, and watch that smoke that's out there, the cloud.
Definitely be safe. And at this time next week, we'll have more Orioles to talk about, and we'll have mandatory minicamp, 3-day mandatory minicamp next Tuesday through Thursday. And then that'll be it for the Ravens until they report in late July for the start of training camp. I'm not wishing the summer away. Let's be clear about that. I always remind people of that, but it will be here before we know it. And then we'll be talking about this, getting a little more serious. As the great JR would say in the pro wrestling world, business is about to pick up.
Exactly right. There he goes, Luke Jones here at 1570 AM. Baltimore Positive WNST. We'll take a quick break and come back right after this.